It's the same old story. It's been a long day at the job, or maybe it's just starting to feel long, and you feel that urge to stretch your legs and get a little bit of a break. You walk down the street, or maybe you get behind the wheel of your car, and you feel the weight begin to lift. You walk through the doors, and the sound of the place starts to clear the air. You get a table, you order your drink, you listen to the sounds of the bar, and soak in the conversation. Welcome to the T&E Speakeasy, with your hosts, Caleb and Isaac. Listen in as I discuss the 1973 film, The Way of the Dragon.
Happy Daylight Savings Time, ladies and gentlemen, those in between and unaffiliated. Today, on this extra hour, or less of an hour, we have with you the next Bruce Lee film in our Year of the Dragon retrospective, The Way of the Dragon.
Yeah, very fitting title for our third entry. We're going to learn the ways of the dragon. So I've got my notebook and yeah, I'm studying up for the test to come at the end of this.
Let's see, this was released, I believe, same year, in 1972, from the previous film, sorry.
Oh, then once again, my Sony Ultimate Edition DVD is once again incorrect, because it says this came out in 1973, and this also says that the movie's 90 minutes long, even though it's 98 minutes long. So I don't know who was doing these discs, but yeah, they were not paying very close attention to what they were doing there.
My disc says 1 hour, 39 minutes, 12 seconds.
Thank you. There we go. There's professionalism. Sony, you could learn from that. So
you blew it. Anyway,
you blew it. That's right. That's exactly right. But The Way of the Dragon, here we go. This is after, you know, trying to maybe having some issues with the director of the previous two. Bruce Lee's like, okay, this time it's time for me to lay the groundwork as an auteur. Not only am I going to do the screenplay for this, I'm also going to direct. And I'm also going to play percussion in the band and the soundtrack. Because I want this thing to be exactly how I want it.
This is named the credits of the composer? That's interesting.
No, I just saw it listed somewhere on the... Yeah, looking up this movie.
Oh, I didn't know he played drums. That's awesome. Interesting. I know he's a dancer, but like... Interesting. Anyway...
But The Way of the Dragon, yeah, this was my first time coming to it for whatever reason back in 2020 when I started doing my little Bruce Lee retrospective. I'm not even exactly sure why I didn't get around to this. I did watch End of the Dragon around then and Game of Death. But this one somehow just, maybe I thought that I watched it and just skipped past it. But no, I'd never seen this one before. But how about you? What was your experience with this one?
So this is the middle of the road for our retrospective on Bruce. This is like, yeah, halfway point. Just because there's only two films after this, quite obvious. But yeah, for this one, I didn't know any of that, of the behind the scenes of him being furious with the previous director, even though we're fans of those two previous films. I didn't know any of the controversy, or at least the fact that they butted heads, or maybe one butted the other's head more often. So I was, it probably makes sense that, you know, if he's had a career in Hollywood. I'm not saying it's great or anything like that. Don't worry. I'm just saying like he had a career in Hollywood, I guess has, whatever. So he knew how, so he had been around the, and he was like performing since he was like a child as well. So the entertainment industry is natural to him. So it was only a matter of time before he finally got the chance to, I guess, start directing for Pitt's sakes and telling his own story. That's the nice thing, right? Like to go out and make a story of your own. Because he has many life experiences, so why not like tell that in a film or something else? So he finally gets the chance to do that. That's pretty awesome. So, you know, hopefully, back then, when I first watched this in 2016 or 17, I didn't know if I was aware that this was by him. I think I guess it just went over my head that it said Bruce Lee as director. How about you? What was your first experience with this film?
Oh yeah, that was watching it today. And I had known that he directed one of these, but I didn't know which one it was coming in. And so I was excited, like, oh, okay, this is the one he directed. Like, this is going to be cool. And I think you could tell that he did learn some things and maybe corrected some mistakes from, especially the big boss. Some of the ways that the fight scenes were shot, the way that they build it up, like they kind of savor his big fight, but they still show him doing some moves, just like practicing to be like, okay, this is what we're going to get. Just wait until it starts connecting with heads, these kicks. So I feel like he definitely learned some lessons and coming around to give us something a little bit more polished than, in particular, the big boss. I think we both really loved Fist of Fury. So I guess, yeah, that's the one that this one's got to live up to. But very different in tone.
Absolutely. Before anything, let me just do a quick summary of the events of the film. So again, apologies, I don't remember all the characters' names, and I know Caleb probably doesn't either. Pardon me. So there's professionalism number one there. But we have Bruce Lee's character. Once again, in a similar situation to in the Big Boss, he once again finds himself in another land, coming to another land. This is Rome, where I believe, a friend of his or a master or teacher of his has sent him over to his niece, because his niece lives in Rome and she's part of a company of other people from Hong Kong or China in a restaurant out abroad. So there's a local mafia or crime syndicate that's kind of harassing them. So basically they want him to go over there and be their protector, or at least, you know, be their bouncer and stop the mafia from harassing these people, these foreign, or yeah, these people trying to, you know, make a new lot in life or anything like that, start new and fresh. And yeah, that's from there, things go awry and we have some fights. And yeah, so Caleb, what are your initial thoughts on Way of the Dragon?
Yeah, Way of the Dragon. Well, in line with the previous two films, I was expecting this one to feature some of the stuff that we've seen previously, such as a more kind of grim end to it. I was bracing myself this time because I was like, okay, the past two have had surprisingly grim endings, so I'm curious if this is going to go in that same way. I was expecting to see that kind of predatory flair that Bruce Lee could show in those previous two movies when he gets that kind of bloodlust. And so very early on, we started getting some more like comedic tone scenes. There's even a moment when, because Bruce Lee, again, he's a stranger in a strange land. He can't speak English or Italian, I guess. He opens up a menu and it does like the comedic like wah, wah, wah kind of sound effect. And I was like, oh, this one's going to be a little bit more silly than I was expecting. And so, yeah, it took me a little bit to be like, okay, this is going to give us something very different in tone. And once I kind of got with that, I was like, oh, wow, I'm really appreciating seeing this side of Bruce Lee. And I'm glad that something like this does exist in his filmography in comparison to some of the more grim stuff from those first two. So, yeah, initial thoughts, I came away really positive. If I was going to say my best thing for it, I think it's, oh, I don't know, that's, ooh. It might just be the charisma of Bruce Lee himself. I think in terms of his kind of charm as a screen presence, like maybe he gave some stronger acting in the previous one, but just as like a fun star that you want to see go through a plot, I think this one shows that he can just be a chameleon and work in any kind of story. He can just balance that stuff so well. So I think he's my best thing. If I had to pick a worst thing, I currently can't think of one, except maybe just that the plot itself feels fairly loose. But I don't think it really needed a very tight plot. I think that the movie is just kind of, it's just like a hangout movie. You just have fun being with the characters, seeing this world, seeing the fun Bruce Lee character. So if the plot itself is a little bit more in the background, I think that's okay. But how about you? What were your thoughts on this one? Initial thoughts?
Well, my initial thoughts was that, well, we're going to get something that, like I said, through the eyes of Bruce Lee, let's see what that is. And, you know, how this movie made me feel was, instead of the dramas we had gotten with the previous two films, this time we got something a little bit more laid back, almost. Maybe ambitious as well, where this is the first time he's in the director's chair, so he wanted to do things that may not just been for him, but also maybe like a wider audience back home, potentially. Well, just, I guess, in America, but also in China. Mm. So, Well, I like the previous two films. This one definitely I feel apprehensive over, but not in a negative way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm curious if I should try to feel that out now or wait till after your best thing, worst thing.
Yeah, just want to put a pin in that. Don't worry, I'll come back to it.
Sure.
So my best thing has to be the fight. The fight at the end. The fight at the end is like masterfully done. And kind of like I had searched for that. I won't get into it now, obviously. But I had searched for that one. I think I first saw that fight online, like on YouTube. I like searched it when I was going through like, you know, martial arts fight scenes or something like that. And obviously this one comes up. And looking at this again now, it is the best part of it. And it is one that stands in the halls of like fight scenes in movies fame. Like I think it might be in my like personal top five for just the beginning, the middle, and the end of it. Tells a story despite maybe there could have been more to maybe the narrative and why they're there. My worst thing is I think the same thing I think I will say this time, the plot is there, and I kind of wish it was a little bit more involved, or maybe I'm wrong with that, or maybe it's like the first time directing. I obviously shouldn't pass judgment since I've never come up with a film, and he obviously has. So I think it's similar to your worst thing. But for now, Caleb, where would you like to start with this film?
Well, I guess let's try to feel out your apprehension.
Of course.
Now, was it kind of apprehension coming in, remembering the tone of this one, or was it more a feeling that you got while you were watching it and not really knowing how to respond to the maybe lighter tone? Or,
well, I guess I'll just say that I one of the things I did enjoy about the previous two films was that heroic bloodshed side, almost, or at least the fact that it does end in a way that may leave people unsatisfied, but I like that a lot. I really, I don't know why, like I love that ending for how like dramatic it is and tragic it is.
Yeah, and it was funny with both, because it's almost like what they say about what Hitchcock was doing in Psycho with the shower scene, where it's like, oh, I'm going to give, you know, all these people want to come see this movie. I'm going to give them what they want, a naked lady on the screen in a shower, just, you know, kind of taking pleasure in bathing herself. And then I'm going to punish the audience for wanting that by murdering her right in front of them. I feel like they were doing that with his previous two movies. It was like, oh yeah, let's show these horrible monsters so that we could get Bruce Lee all riled up and then he could be let loose, this cage dog who will just go on this kill crazy rampage, and at the end we're going to punish you for wanting that rampage. It worked more with Fist of Fury, but especially for the big boss, it was kind of like, oh, this was such a kind of fun experience, and then to just give us such a down note, it's like, oh wow, that's, yeah, it does feel dramatic and bold. This one definitely has that kind of lighter edge to it all the way through. It is interesting, too, that even near the very end, he still never wants to kill the bad guys. He's just like, okay, I just want to teach them a lesson, make them leave us alone. But, oh, even the guy that was acting like a coward on a building, just firing a gun from, you know, as far away as he could be, Bruce Lee still doesn't kill him when he has the chance, just throws a dart in his ass. It's just kind of like, oh, you know, I'll punish you a little bit, give you a little slap on the butt, but, you know, don't do that next time. But he still won't even kill that guy. So I could see why maybe you'd be a little bit disappointed not to see that side of him in this one.
I actually appreciate that a lot. I love that detail of he leaves all his opponents alive. He never succumbs to that brutality that we first saw in The Big Boss. And I guess I was wrong in that, where I'm misremembering the fact that not all his films are very violent. I mean, he gets violent with in Fist of Fury. I definitely know that. And
yeah.
And this one, he's a lot more restrained. I don't know if that was because of the director's decision for the previous two films to make him be hog wild and, you know, go like a lunatic. But in this one, it's a lot more reserved. And that's fine. That isn't the issue at hand. It's just, yeah, I agree with you in that there is a little bit like of a meandery plot almost. But
yeah,
definitely more. When I say James Bondian, you're more expert than I am. I just mean like they go to, for Chinese people, an exotic location that is Rome, and just let the camera roll and go to all these like different locations just to like have it be like a trip almost.
Yeah, travelogue. Yeah, and I will say that that's an element of film that I always love, especially going back to, you know, the past. Oh, you're almost seeing like a snapshot of like time traveling, because Rome has existed when this was shot. You know, it doesn't exist anymore, and it will never exist again. And so the fact that we just get to walk on the streets, I mean, it was clear that they were filming. You know, it wasn't like they were telling everyone that they were filming there. It was just regular people living their lives. Just getting to peek into that window and see it, I always think that stuff like that's cool. But yeah, you mentioned about the plot, just feeling like it was just never really quite there. There was some points, especially when we get to the final end, and they just decide to be like, okay, you want a gang guy? You want us all to come in your car and you're going to drive us to this dinner with the boss? I was like, okay, why are they having the dinner with the boss in the first place? Why are they trusting this guy to get into a car with him? I was like, there was some times in this when I was not fully understanding motivations. But at the very end, it just feels like they're just like, okay, we just want to get these people to where we need them. So let's just kind of get them there. Who cares how we get them there? Let's just throw them in a car with one of the main baddies.
And it did remind me of the back and forth in The Big Boss, where they, you know, Bruce Lee's clan and his comrades, like, were going to the big boss and the manager of the ice factory to be like, where's the police? Like, aren't the police going to get involved? Where's our brothers? Where's our family at? Like, what's going on? So I kind of felt that the thugs going there and being goons and enforcing the mafia's wishes to, you know, snuff them out of the restaurant. I don't know why. I was like, this time I was like, maybe I need to see it again. But like, I felt there were stakes in like the first two films, the first two films. I don't know why. And this one, it's weird. Like,
yeah,
especially when like the manager of the restaurant is like, you know, we kind of have our backs against the wall because we're foreigners to this land. So they kind of, you know, they have the one up on us where they could just kick us out of town. So I'm like, yeah, so how are they going to, like, you know, get out of this back and forth? And it did definitely worry me. And I was like, yeah, I don't really know. Maybe that's just like the script or anything like that. But those were the apprehensions that I was having.
Yeah. And I guess to further, I guess it's a good, might as well get some of the weaknesses out of the movie first.
Yeah, of course, please.
The whole conflict around the restaurant and the land, I was just like, oh, like, why exactly aren't they taking the deal? Wouldn't this just make their lives a hell of a lot easier? I don't think they ever make it clear that the mob people are, like, giving them, you know, pennies for the dollar type of deal. It almost seemed like they're willing to, they're like, okay, we'll give you whatever you want. Just get out of this land. We need it for, I don't know, development or something. But they're just so insistent. And I was kind of confused. I was like, is that lead chef guy, is he, like, her dad? Because I know that she's the one that owns the land. But I was like, is he the one who runs the restaurant and she just is the landowner? I wasn't fully sure why she was so invested in maintaining this restaurant.
So her, at least in the... Which dub did you watch, by the way?
The same one that I've been watching for all the other ones. The Cantonese dub.
Okay, so have I. At least in the beginning, it said that, you know, her dad used to own the restaurant. And then he passed away the previous month. And then she inherited the whole thing. I don't know if Uncle Wang is the chef. Apologies. I don't know if Uncle Wang is the chef. Wang is the chef. Or if he is back over in Hong Kong and he sent Lee's character over here.
No, I'm pretty sure Uncle Wang is the big Wang. The betrayer of the group.
Yeah, out of nowhere.
But it actually does make sense. Because I did keep wondering. I was like, man, he's the one who's constantly like, okay, we need to make a deal with these guys. We need to not fight them. We need to send Bruce Lee home. And he's the one that's like, oh, you know, they want to have this dinner. Of course we'll be there. Absolutely. And I was like, is this guy just like the most like pathetic pacifist that I've ever seen? He's just willing to take any abuse as long as they... I couldn't understand his character at all until we got to the end. And I was like, okay, I guess that makes him track a little bit better. That the whole time he was working against them. But it was not a very compelling reveal, I thought.
Let's talk about that now. Do you think that was like a last minute decision, or was that, you know, like during script writing, or was that like there from the start? Because I, as like a Disney twist villain, I suppose, it did, like, it literally made the ending kind of feel, well, the whole ending itself, despite the fight, definitely felt like rushed, like very rushed. Like, you know, Robert Wall's character, you know, just shows up, shoots the sniffling assistant, and then the chef in the chest, you know, Bruce Lee and him like have a back and forth dart and gun duel, and then the police show up, arrest him, and then it's like immediately over. And I was like,
yeah,
what the flip? Like, what the hey happened here?
Yeah, there was no release. There was no like righteous revenge for him. It was just, oh, the cops came. And so it's like, oh, but I actually did. It was funny that we were talking about this when we are, because I'm playing the movie in the background, and I just saw the scene again, and I did, this scene did stand out for me, and I thought it was a little bit strange, because early on we see some folks who were from Hong Kong or were living here, and you know, they all seem kind of like either various degrees like disinterested in the homeland, or maybe like nostalgic but don't really care. But there is one moment with that Uncle Wang where he's like, it's been a long time since I was back home, and he like repeats it, and the camera pulls in on him slowly, and the kind of smile, jovial side that he's had throughout all the other scenes with him, it fades a little bit, and you see this kind of faraway look on his face. So I guess if you read into that a little bit more, because that was his whole thing, like he thought that, oh, I've been a working man my whole life and I don't own a damn thing. With the money that they were going to make for selling this restaurant, I could finally go back home and see my family. So I guess it was built in there. It's just, yeah, not, maybe it's just the way that they delivered his reveal when he stabs them, and then all of a sudden he's laughing maniacally like he's been evil all this time. But they still give him a speech of being like, oh, it's if only you guys would have listened, I never wanted to come to this. But then he's still laughing maniacally at the same time. So.
Yeah, it's a different, it's a performance that should be compelling, but it unfortunately is not, for me at least, where it's just, it comes out of nowhere, and that's fair. Nothing has to be obvious, like, you know, I don't know, just be a like, have a bunch of, like, bricks in my head or something like that, so something could be so obvious, but, you know, again, yeah, that's fair, that's what I didn't pick up on that. That's probably because it wasn't until the very end, and I have to rewatch the movie, so. Has been a few years, so that's fair. If that's a good little point there, but okay, no, that, yeah, I get that. Still, definitely feels rushed, and you're right. Yeah, yeah, he does. I remember in like when it's Lunar New Year. Hey, close enough. Not really. but during Lunar New Year, he says, "Hopefully, this year will be good for business." And I was, again, I took it as very innocent, but again, it wasn't until the very end when it was revealed, like, oh, wow, he's been a sinister son of a gun this whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I and with the fact that, like, I guess, what's her name? Nora Miao's character, excuse me. Her not selling the restaurant, is it pride of continuing on her father's legacy to not give in to bullies?
Yeah, no, that could be, yeah. Yeah, maybe he held out for a long time, and now they see their chance. Like, oh, it's just this weak woman. Let's just blow her over until she can give it to us. It could be something like that. And I was even thinking with the uncle, too. It's like, oh, you know, my poor niece, she can't handle her business. Let me send a man in to help her out. I was like, oh, a little bit of the old world ways maybe in there.
Again, it looks like Uncle Wang is from Hong Kong, and he's not the chef. I think, at least what the dialogue is telling me.
Yeah, maybe he's not. He's always wearing that, like, white outfit that just looks like it would be a chef's outfit. I think that's why I thought that that's what he was.
Because she says she writes to him, and he sends over Bruce Lee, so it's like, I think it's the two different figures.
Oh, okay, yes, I see what you mean. Yeah. Yeah, then I'm not sure what the name of the betrayer was. I thought it was Uncle Wang. But
apologies. Yeah, that's on us.
Yeah, should have written our notes better.
And I guess also on the subject of maybe not weaknesses, but what'd you think of Robert Wall's character as a mafioso?
There's definitely some tonal stuff in this movie that feels like it's a little bit all over the place. The first time that we see his gang of baddies, I was like, oh my gosh, this feels like a Sister Street Fighter movie. Like, they feel so over the top. But then it's like they slowly get less over the top as it goes along. And I was, when we first see the big boss, I was kind of like, oh, I was expecting him to be a little bit more cartoonish too, but he just plays it very kind of grounded. And in that regard, I feel like he doesn't really make much of an impact. I feel like he's kind of flat. which is too bad. And maybe it was because he was like an older guy who couldn't really get into a fight with Bruce Lee. And they were like, okay, he's not really going to be our big bad. He's just kind of the pencil pusher guy. You know, he's the money guy, but he's not the one that we really want to hate. That's more the interpreter guy from Fist of Fury. I don't know what his name is in this one either, but the Japanese baddie.
Japanese or?
Yeah, I thought he was Japanese in this.
Oh, I thought he was Chinese.
Oh, maybe I was getting confused when they bring in the Japanese fighters near the end. Maybe I thought he was Japanese again. I don't know. Maybe I'm just bringing that over from Fist of Fury. That could be it.
Probably. I thought he was, once again, how do I put this? He's, he's from the same culture as them, but he has gone Benedict Arnold. That's what he is. He's like turned rogue basically and gone over for prosperity's sake and to keep himself alive. And so he's allied himself with those to, again, be self-sustained, or at least not self-sustained, but at least for out of self-preservation, he decides to align himself with those who are top dog. And to do that, he has no problems or qualms with betraying his own like fellow countrymen or person of nationality's sake.
Yeah, but in this one, he's just a hood. He's just a mobster. So it doesn't feel like charged like it did in Fist of Fury.
Yes, no, a very colorful one at that.
Yeah, I did wonder, because especially when he comes to be like, oh, you know, now that we've all kind of realized that this fighting isn't going to work, let's do this dinner together. The boss will be there. I was like, oh, he's playing this scene like so fey. I was like, is he supposed to be like gay? I wondered that a couple times through the movie, because he has this very effeminate kind of angle to him. And I was like, I don't know if that's what they're going for.
Yeah. Did you not see his previous, like his clothing in some of the previous scenes? And again, nothing wrong with that, but I don't know. Like, well, I don't know where that decision came from, if that was Lee's decision to do that or not. But if that was the actor's decision, fair enough. I mean, definitely made it memorable.
Yeah, and again, like we said, this movie feels like it's all over the place, and sometimes it does feel like they don't exactly know where they're going or what they're doing. But I think the movie just keeps a fun vibe. So I'm like, okay, you want to throw something like that at me? I'll take it. I thought his performance was a lot of fun.
Speaking of all over the place, what about that scene in the beginning when they're at the fountain, and then as Nora's character, she's instructing Lee's character over, you know, the etiquettes and how, I say foreigners, but how at least people out of the country should kind of act and understand the mores and norms of, you know, the area they're in. All of a sudden, this woman just shows up and, you know, so then, you know, her and Lee's character lock eyes, and next thing Lee knows, he's in her apartment.
Yeah, and then, yeah, once she strips, he flees. I did want to comment, I really enjoy those early scenes of him being like pushed into this culture that he doesn't understand, and he's, whenever he's interacting with her, Nora, she's constantly put off by him. I was like, is it supposed to be like he's like a hick? And she's like, oh, here I'm having to deal with this like this country kid who doesn't know anything, and I'm this city wise girl. Like, one of the first things he asks her is like, where's the toilet? And the first thing he asks when they get to her apartment is, where's the toilet? I was just like, is this supposed to be the sign that he's like a little bit classless? I wasn't sure.
Unless the comedy comes from like she doesn't know any of the context that's happening, that's happened to him, and we have followed him there through his endeavors of foreign food to him.
I was like, does he have IBS, or is he just having some issues with the local food? I did wonder about that. Yeah, because eventually we do see him. He like goes into a bathroom. He leaves the stall open, and he like stands in the toilet and gets ready to do his business. And I was like, oh, is this supposed to be funny? Like, this is some out there stuff.
So in a way, I think this may be one of the strengths of the movie. I got to be careful how I word this. But one of the things that I want to praise is I think Lee at least had the forethought with this film, at least early on, to kind of portray it from like, you know, just any old person from China or Hong Kong, wherever, like comes to, it was in America, but it goes to Rome in Italy, and you know, maybe touches on that primordial fear, or at least goes into that like worry of like, I'm a stranger in a foreign land, and just the stress of being there and not like having any like fellow brethren, or just again like the whole new environment to him. So I think he does a good job portraying him that way.
Oh yeah, and I think a lot of it is funny too, like when he doesn't understand the menu and he just flips to a random page and then just very adamantly is like, this is what I want, just points to it repeatedly. And then once he gets it, he has like a moment of like shock of all these soups, but then quickly, like, it's always about his image. He like puts on his little thing and acts like, oh yeah, this is what I wanted, and then starts eating it. I think all that stuff's pretty funny.
And it's interesting how we find, at least the way he's portraying it's funny, whereas if it was somebody else, let's say that if it was an American comedy instead, and you know, he would, Lee's character was like the side character, for instance, that would probably be looking like a little bit disrespectful, wouldn't it?
If it was like an American going to somewhere and then not knowing the language or how to operate and was kind of being stuck in their ways kind of thing.
Let me rephrase that. Sorry. That too, that could be a thing. But imagine if you have an American film with white people, it's set in America, and then all of a sudden like a foreign person comes out, or a person foreign to America comes in.
Mm.
They don't know a lick of English or anything like that. And all the troubles or obstacles that they have to deal with, as Lee's character is dealing with early on in the film, happens to them. And it was portrayed as comedy in this American film. I feel that may be a little bit like disrespectful or insensitive.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
So what I'm saying is the way Lee portrays it, it's, I guess, okay for comedy wise. Like he, because eventually, like, they kind of like move past that, which is nice. But I still want to give praise to the fact that, like, he does at least bring in that, like, stranger in a strange land eye. Has the comedy to it, but it's, I guess they move on from it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, they hold on to it for, yeah, a while, but they start to kind of sprinkle it in more. Like when you mentioned when she takes him to go see those fountains. And all I can think about is like, oh, all this wasted space. Like, if this was back in Hong Kong, oh, we could build skyscrapers here and live off that rent money. And she was shaking her head like, oh, look at this guy. All you can think about is all this weird stuff from home. He can't appreciate the beauty of art. All you can think of is from that Hong Kong mindset. Or like when he wants to put his money in the bank, he's like, oh, no, it's much safer to just, you know, walk around the banks. You know, you can't trust them. It's just got to keep it on you. That's what's safe. And then she takes him there and he like can't trust foreigners in any way. So he won't even take a taxi. He's so distrustful of them.
I mean, to be fair, I also rarely take taxis because I'm just like, I can walk. I'll do it myself. And that's also where that leads to, like, when the banker comes and kind of like, you know, puts his hand on Lee's character's shoulder. It's like, oh, that's, you know, like, what are you doing? And it's just like, oh, that's just how they do things here. That's what leads to, like, you know, the woman, like, taking him into her apartment.
Yeah, but it is an interesting question you raise, and I think that a lot when I watch movies that are produced in other places, that I was like, if this was produced in the West, people would be up in arms. I think just the West in general has a strange kind of polarization around those issues that they don't afford to the rest of the world. they focus it on, like, if it's from us, then we'll have an issue with it. For particular reasons, I guess.
That's just, you know, local dealings. If it was, you know, the other way around, if the shoe was on the other foot, maybe you'd say it the other way around, as long as it doesn't revert to, say, like, the white savior or anything like that, or going indigenous or anything like that. That's what they want to avoid. But in this case, I think Lee found a good balance of, well, again, I don't really think there's any insensitivity, because it isn't really, there's no mocking of the, well, other than like the space, but I guess you could say there is, but it's not a distasteful way, I think. He's just coming across as, yet like a culture clash.
Yeah, exactly, culture clash, living in a very different kind of place. Like when she takes him to go see the ruins, he just kind of shrugs them off, like, what's there to see? I can see this a lot in the, like, the slums in my area. Like, what's unique about this? And she just kind of shrugs that off, like, oh, like, here's someone who has no respect for history. About, you know, he just has lived in a very different environment, so.
Yeah, and goes, actually kind of supports your point about her being maybe the more refined suburb, or at least person who lives in the city, whereas, yeah, he could be a little bit more, you know, and living in a rural society, or at least place in the new territories, by the way, at least he says. He doesn't live in Hong Kong, lives in the new territories. Mm. Whatever that means at this point, I'll...
I don't know.
I don't know what he's referring to. I'll let that be. But, yeah, it definitely shows that, you know, this character isn't, you know, all squeaky clean or anything like that.
Oh, if there was one joke that I feel like maybe it was just lost on me, I don't know what the hell it was going for, was when they first leave the airport and they get to her car and he walks around it a couple times and he's like, is it a flying horse? Is it, you know, he was saying some weird things about horses. He was like, is it a, like a machine horse? And she just looked like, oh my God, who is this hick? And I was like, what is the joke? Like, it didn't look like it was a Mustang. That's what I thought at first. That maybe it said Mustang on it and he just didn't understand.
So, I don't know if yours had this, but my subtitles had, like, in brackets, like, is it a wild horse and then Mustang? Is it a this? Or, okay. So I just assumed they were talking about brands. Like, he was referring to cars. That's what I thought it was.
He was trying to be, like, trying to seem like he knew what he was talking about and being like, oh, is it that kind of car?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. That helps.
I think that's what... I just assumed that, and I also just assumed, like, this is another, like, you know, culture shock of, like, we don't have these kind of vehicles over in Hong Kong.
Yeah, I guess moving away from that, I do like her in general and her kind of, like, disinterest in him and her kind of, like, bafflement. Like, why did my uncle send me this person who can't speak English, doesn't seem to know anything about my culture, only seems to really know about this very rural kind of lifestyle? How is he possibly going to help me in these dealings? And she keeps giving him the cold shoulder. He'll try to, like, make a joke, and she'll just kind of, like, shrug, like, ugh, like why do I have to deal with this weirdo? I thought there was a lot of good humor there, and it wasn't until he first shows off his badass fighting skills that she almost immediately turns around. It's like, oh, never mind, like, this guy, yeah, this is someone that I want to keep around.
Yeah, so before we kind of get into that, I guess I'll also say, like, you know, similar to, as we said before, like, the big boss, yeah, Lee comes over, Lee's character comes over from a different land to this new one, as this time a protector. There's no promise to his mother by way of jade necklace. This time it is him, like, you know, being there as the, I guess, in a way, yeah, protecting. I mean, well, beating up guys just is protecting, but very similar situation to the big boss, where he comes into this, like, you know, family, this familial unit, and, you know, is introduced to some of the cooks, other cooks, and they're all doing the karate there. And I like this is another thing where I like about this movie is, like, he mentions, doesn't matter what form it is. I really like that. It doesn't matter, like, what way of martial art you're doing, as long as you do, like, expression, as long as it comes, like, you expressing oneself, it doesn't matter. And I think that was a big statement he wanted to make, like, with his philosophies of, like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because I guess at this point, yeah, it didn't matter if you were doing Muay Thai, karate, judo, boxing, whatever. As long as one expresses themselves the way they want to, that's what I care. Like, that's what I believe in. And he never does mock anybody, because in a way, like, that's, what's his name? Returning character. I should also mention that in a second, but, like, the other guy, the comic relief character, he comes back from this as well. He mentions, you know, oh, karate is inferior to, like, Chinese boxing and vice versa.
Yeah.
So I do like that Lee never does immediately go, like, my kung fu is better than yours.
Yeah, no, you could feel that was a personal statement that he wanted to put out there. And, of course, maybe because we know about his personal beliefs and that stuff, maybe it stood out more for us. But, yeah, I definitely highlighted that in my notes, too, that moment.
But quickly, just as the returning cast, we have, as I said, yeah, Nora Miao. She was the, I think, girlfriend, actually, or the fiancé to Lee's character in the previous film. We have, I forget his name, but he was the He's a big boss's son, like Scumbag's son in Boss.
Tony.
And then he was one of Tony. That's right. Thank you. Yeah, exactly. Tony. And then he was one of the fellow, I guess, classmates of Lee's character in The Fist of Fury. And this time he's one of the chefs. So it's going to see, it's cool to see him, but I wish they, I kind of liked him like in that Fist of Fury or in that Big Boss, excuse me. And once again, he just like didn't have much to do here. And I was like, oh man, like I wish he had more to do in this.
Oh, agreed. Absolutely. I wish that he would have been among the bad guys. I think he would have been more fun than, yeah, some of the generic, just kind of like stuntmen that they have in there.
I assume most of those guys are probably a bunch of like Lee's students that he had.
Yeah, probably.
When he was teaching martial arts. I think that's what I remember from some of my research. I could be wrong on that, but what else is there? I know that. The comic relief guy. I forget his name as well, but yeah, he was in, you know, played a similar role in The Big Boss, and then he's also in either one of the classmates or one of Lee's superiors in the previous film in Fist of Fury. Unless that's a different guy.
Yeah, I think it's a different guy. This one, I think, is younger. He's got a similar look, similar body type.
Apologies.
But yeah, I think they just wanted to get someone to fill that same role, but I don't think it was the same guy. It's been a little while since we watched those ones, by the way, for anybody wondering. So we might not be remembering too well.
And of course, I could have just easily like looked it up, like looked on IMDb and done some cross-referencing, but I didn't do that.
Yeah, I'm not sure if there was many other crossovers. Maybe some of these other karate guys that he hangs out with. I'm not sure. But yeah, I did like that bit when they were like, oh, you know, show us your display of the Chinese boxing. Like you seem to think it's, you know, superior than what we do. They also seem to have that like condescending quality of like, oh, here's this guy just got shipped in from Hong Kong. Like, what does he know? They have that same kind of quality that she has towards him. And I love that once they finally do see the display, they immediately turn around. They're like, oh, we're willing to just throw out karate. Just please be our master. You're just so cool, man. I thought that was pretty fun.
Yeah, once again, similar situation in The Big Boss, where, you know, as soon as he becomes foreman, everybody's, you know, cheering and clapping. And there's obviously that naysayer who's like the leader of the karate pact. And then he's like, yeah, I don't know if you're as tough as you say you are. And then immediately, like, you know, he shows his moves on the kick shield there and, you know, sends his bud flying there. And then he's just like, you know, all eyes are open. And yeah, that's when the first, you know, conflict happens with when the thug is like, you know, get frisky. And I also like the fact, again, similar to The Big Boss, he does the right thing. Lee does the right thing of holding back or at least delaying the action from happening and starting. Both times of displaying his moves, and then when the thugs come in and, you know, enforce the place and be like, you're acting tough guy, like tough guys here.
Yeah, and they done a little bit of setup, like when when Lee went off to that woman's apartment, the Italian woman. We see him, he's like, he walks past a mirror and he's so jumpy that he sees a reflection in the mirror and thinks someone's there to like jump him. So he immediately like puts up the moves and he's like, oh crap. And then once he realizes it's just a mirror, he just starts practicing his moves. And then of course right there, yeah, they're like, oh, show us your Chinese boxing. And he's about to do it. We see him get into form. So they're giving us some build up. And then once he does unleash on those guys, they give us a very long fight scene when they all attack him as a group, and then they're like, okay, now we're going to attack separately. And I was like, I don't know, I appreciate them showing us all this action that they built up for us to see, but I did feel like maybe that scene went a little bit too long when they were getting like maybe like six guys. You just, the lead one's like, okay, now you go. And I was like, okay, we're not getting a lot of variance here with some of this action and that early scene.
One of the things that I guess is meta in that sense is, you know, he had the two-section staff in the previous film, the nunchuck, excuse me. So this time he's like, okay, and he did the whole, like, you know, demonstration of it where, you know, he does a really good flurry, and or at least he does a really good, like, demonstration of it, a full kata, if you will. And then this time it's like, okay, now there's two-section staffs.
Until he just ditches it. He's like, okay, I've beaten these guys up enough. I can just now just take him with one.
Now he's just showing off. Now he's just like, yeah, all right, I could easily keep like whipping your guys' butts with two of them. I'm going to just do it with one now. And I kind of like that. I kind of, like, it is him showing off. But then I was like, okay, so they all just, like, get up and leave. Like, just, like, all right, we're done. We're walking up. And yeah. So they were working. I was like, okay, I'm going back to the...
We're concussed. It's time to sit down.
They just walk through the restaurant awkwardly. It's just like, yeah, get out of here. They just, like, regain consciousness and then start beating everybody up again. Like, okay.
That was one thing that I didn't much care for with the fact that they made it a point of him not to kill any of the bad guys, is that we continuously see the same stuntmen returning over and over again. And I was like, yeah, give him a day, and they recover from the beating that we just saw him deliver. Really brutal beating. They're totally fine the next day, just like wrestlers. I was like, maybe switch up some of these extras. You know, did that bother you at all, or was that just me, my kooky ways?
I mean, I was, you know, like, you did mention these were, like, you know, Sister Street Fighter, like, thugs and goons. And, yeah, I was basically almost like Roadhouse goons close to it. But I was expecting their comeuppance at some point where it's just like, all right, can somebody please, like, rip their throats out of them, please? But that's, don't worry, it can go that far.
It's not Patrick Swayze.
It's not Patrick Swayze just yet. The back and forth where we keep going to different, like, keep doing the same dance over and over again. Yeah, I will admit, yeah, it did kind of, as fun as it was in the moment, I was like, oh, this feels awesome. Narratively, it's like, okay, I mean, like, what is new here? Like, this escalation is going to end violently. Like, there's, yeah, I was like, there needs to be consequence to this, or something bad needs to happen here. And
yeah,
I just feel like we're, yeah, you're right, we're just kind of spinning our wheels in this case, as cool as the action is. Like, what's really happening here? And yeah, unfortunately, like, yeah, Robert Wall's character, yeah, was, I don't want to say it, like, yeah, just like with his, well, that first big boss character, oh man, he was a whole load of fun. He was like a charismatic son of a gun. And
yeah,
like I said, I enjoyed his presence in that one, because how much like a slime ball he was. This one didn't really go with that. It didn't go there for me.
Yeah, and that is kind of the problem. It feels like throughout the movie, there's no escalation until we kind of get to the big, okay, we're just going to, suddenly the characters are willing to get into a car with this guy and drive to an undisclosed location in the middle of nowhere, like a quarry somewhere or something, which didn't really make sense. But I was like, pretty much everything we've seen at this point, it's like, okay, they're going to come to the restaurant, they're going to demand that they sign the sale, or they're going to fight. They just kept doing that repeatedly. And it was like, how much story can we really get out of that dynamic being just done over and over again? I mean, I guess they kidnap her, but even that didn't really feel like it was a big escalation. I don't know.
I mean, far be it from me to go here, but like, yeah. I mean, Sister Street Fighter, they did some nasty stuff. Like, they went to certain lengths that I don't even think Bruce Lee would ever go to.
Yeah.
Like, they did some terrible things. I ain't justifying it or anything like that. That was one of the things that was, like, deplorable about those films. Not that I still don't enjoy it, but still, they didn't get, like, nasty with her in that case. And I'm not asking.
That's good. Just like, yeah, thank God.
They didn't, like, rip her fingernails off or anything like that, or start, like, breaking her legs or with a hammer.
Or worse.
Or, yeah, exactly. No, pardon me, I gotta stop.
Yeah, they always kept her professional. They treat her like just an equal. Yeah, you can feel the villains in those other movies. They're like, women are either something that's, you know, we got to fight, or something that's just there to be like a sex object for us to abuse.
Or at worst, disposable.
Yeah, definitely disposable. Yeah, and those Sister Street Fighters. Yeah, and that is one thing. This does feel like, it feels the least exploitation-like out of these Bruce Lee movies.
Sort of, other than, like, you know, the boobs at the beginning.
Yeah, even that was just there for a gag. It wasn't like they lingered on it needlessly, and the violence themselves, they pull back, and it's not about just kind of reveling in brutality or bloodshed.
That's true.
It's more of like just a comedy action movie, really.
It's only until the final fight when the kill happens. Oh, it's treated with utmost respect. I'm kind of hoping not to go to that just yet, because, like, just I definitely want to talk about that, because, oh, it's such a good moment. But let me just gush. Can I just gush and be like a hound dog or something like that? Like, one, it's like this is the most like modern of his two films that he's made, or three films he's been in. Wow, the 70s look rad. Holy smokes. Yeah. That like apartment that she's she's in. Holy cats. I tell you what, man, like, oh, it's some happening and funky stuff, man. I don't know what the English soundtrack was sounding like, but I kind of want to go back and listen to it and see if it also like swinging, like you were saying with the Big Boss.
Yeah, I don't know if the other ones had alternative music, but no, I agree. I even loved her, a lot of her outfits that she wore, and her herself. I mean, not to go into those ways, but I do think she's super duper attractive in this one. And I think we talked about in the previous two that it was like they never really got the equation of a kind of leading woman for like the romantic angle with Bruce Lee. They didn't really get it right in the previous two movies. I feel like this is the one where the lead or where the female character stands out the most. And I think she rises for the occasion. I think she's quite charming in this one as well.
Yeah, I wonder, I don't know if it goes both ways. I do wonder, like, she definitely starts getting the like, puppy dog eyes for Lee there. He gets, like, yep. She gets that. I don't know about, like, the other way around. If he, like, maybe it's a little bit more subtle, but, like, oh, man, just, yeah, seeing her and her outfits and, like, man, she is very beautiful. Like,
yeah,
wow, I'm just, like, I'm, yeah, wow, she looks nice. So apologies if I, you know, sound like a hound dog or something like that, or tasteless, but a hairless ape here, but like, oh my goodness. But yeah, no, she, yeah, definitely the charisma between her and Lee is felt. And yeah, I'm glad that she kind of like has basically worked up to, you know, be this, I guess, like she's been in the previous two. So now she has like a more, I guess, in role, I suppose. I mean, yeah, she's sure she's a damsel in distress in that moment, but like,
yeah.
She doesn't really have any fighting moves. So it would have been kind of cool if he had kind of like taught her some of the moves where she'd be a little bit more open. So he gives her something.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the both of them, like she gives him, because she kind of says like she's going to take him around town, obviously. Like, you know, he has his conflicts there. He has his opinions about, you know, what they like really they should be doing with all like the space they have in the town. And yeah, that'd be kind of cool where like both of them kind of like give something else to each other. They don't do that, but sorry, I don't want to rewrite the script, excuse me, but that'd be kind of cool if they went down that avenue.
Yeah, you know, it might have been interesting, might have been cool, because like early on when the cook or whatever he was, like he's very insistent about like, oh, like what's new in Hong Kong, like what's going on? He really wants the news. He hasn't been back in a while. And she says that she hasn't been home in 12 years, but she clearly like just doesn't have interest. Like that was her old life. It doesn't mean anything to her anymore. And she very clearly looks down on him from being from Hong Kong of like, oh, like you're still living there. Like, that's just like, that's the old country. Like that's just like a dead end. And so if they could have introduced a way to have him kind of be a bridge back to her own past and that culture of like maybe her wanting to revisit Hong Kong at the end and go with him, maybe something like that might've been another cool way to make their relationship more fleshed out. Or make her feel more fleshed out.
Yeah, where by either you know, him giving you know, some of his martial arts to her, not just to you know the other cooks, but or the hand, excuse me, and she kind of like opens his mind about like, okay, maybe you don't have to be so close-minded about another culture and kind of showing him the mm-hmm. positives of Rome and gives us a tour of the city as well. It would probably make the movie a bit longer. But yeah, honestly, like I really would have enjoyed that. And we could have had, you know, some setups for, I mean, we had the setup for the Coliseum in the beginning, which was a wonderful shot, might I say.
Oh, yes.
Maybe it didn't look, you know, great in terms of film quality wise, but just, you know, the wide sweeping shot of, you know, see their car and then you see the Coliseum. And I was like, that was really cool.
Well, I absolutely agree. Yeah, I loved all that stuff. They're traveling through Rome at the start. I didn't know this was going to be set there. So after we left the airport, I was like, oh, this is cool. What this is going to be like. Oh, and just since I did go back to the beginning a little while ago and saw the airport again, what was that scene when he went up to the little kid and spooked him?
I'm not sure. I like him being a jokester, like him being a little bit more like maybe it's an early warning, like not an early warning, you know what I mean, but like an indication that this is going to be a little bit more of a lighthearted film. Maybe it's yes and no, but it's like. is it more of a lighthearted film? Like, sure.
Definitely.
But like, yeah, where he's kind of being mischievous, it's like, it's not really helping your case of being liked by the locals, bud.
Yeah, terrifying little kids by doing whatever he did. I mean, that was, if I was a little kid, that would scare the hell out of me too.
It probably would. Like, hey, now for me as well, if I, okay, so what would I do? Like, what do I do? Excuse me. I just give him, like, you know, the hang time, you know, the thumb up, the pinky out, the other three end, just like, you know, hang time, bud. Like, that's what I do to, you know, any kids that pass by, any babies that just look at me randomly. I'm just like, yo, hang time, bud. And that's it. I'm doing nothing else. I just, like, you know, give him a, you know, make eye contact, go like that, and then go on my merry way.
Yeah, don't, like, open up your mouth and then pretend as if you're going to shove your hand into it and lean really close to their face.
Drop some kid's ice cream cone, man. I can't do that. I'd never want to. Man, I love ice cream, man. I could never deny somebody, like, an ice cream cone.
Oh, but honestly, you were saying you want to save the Chuck Norris part for later in the discussion. Oh, I'm running low on material at this point. I've gone through a lot of my notes until we get to that end a little bit, so.
Yeah, that's fair. The bit where he, you know, I guess starts making darts, like, you know, hand darts or something.
Yeah, I love
like that.
That.
Like, that's good setup, and wow, he has a lot of those. But there's a bit where he, like, flicks one out of his wrist. I'm
yeah.
Like, where did that come from? Because he doesn't have sleeves.
Yeah, I wonder if he, I didn't know what the hell was going on there. I was like, oh, that was weird. I do love when she walked in, she's like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, making darts. And she just kind of like, walks away.
Now, this is an interesting bit as well, if my memory serves me correctly. Forgive me if I'm wrong on this. But I believe that Bruce Lee was actually kind of either an advocate or at least a man of practical taste in nature. One would be surprised by this, him saying this. But he actually was kind of like, you know, a gun is better than martial arts. Or maybe that's not how he said it, excuse me. But he basically said, like, a gun is dangerous to a martial artist. So I think there was a, I don't know where quote it is. I don't know if it was in this film or some other film. I know it's in Enter the Dragon, but there's a point where because brings up guns in this one, right?
Yeah.
I think there's a point where he's, like, wanting to have, like, I guess, use a gun on film. And maybe he just couldn't do it because, you know, I think guns are banned in China or something. I don't know how, or Hong Kong. I don't know how John Woo got away with it, but Bruce Lee would have loved to do that probably. But like, it is interesting that he uses martial arts in this. Maybe in like a future movie, he would have like been a gun toting guy, but it's just interesting how he says like, because he mentions early on, like his character mentions, like, I hear it's easy to get a gun here. It's like, yeah, you're just gonna get like a license or something like that. And it kind of really doesn't go anywhere. And the, you know, the big boss doesn't really like. He has like no guns. We can't use any guns, or else police will be on our tail.
Yeah, they hold the guns, and then right in the same moment, he's like, oh, don't fire that. You know, we can't have anyone knowing that we're in here. It's like, dude, you just said that in front of the people that you're holding hostage by putting guns at them. Martial artists who could quickly turn the tables in this situation if they know that your guns are just for show.
Yeah, they won't suspect anything.
So I did think that was funny.
They're not going to do anything with that new knowledge there.
But I did think that was a little bit of a drop thread. But I liked how he kept getting rid of the guns. He was just like the guy. I really liked the scene when he comes back to his apartment. Or her apartment, I should say. And there's just a guy with a gun there. And he's like, you're coming with me. And then immediately Bruce Lee just completely dispatches him, throws a dart, beats him up, and then just drags him outside and closes the door. And it's like, okay, I'm going to sleep now. Throws away the gun. Oh, that was a funny little scene there, too. Completely undercut the tension.
Anybody who, like, smokes darts is like, wow, he's just throwing darts? Not that kind of darts, guys. Jeez, no, like actual, you know, like wooden darts, you know, like dartboards.
Yeah, but without a feather or anything, I was surprised that those things could move the way they do without any sort of like directional thing. It'd be like throwing pencils.
Have you not seen Deadshot or Bullseye throw pencils at all? Okay, never mind.
Yeah, I didn't realize this guy was a superpowered guy.
Hey, he like had impeccable aim, except for when he had to throw it like 40 yards.
Yeah. Oh, but I guess just before we, unless you have more, but before we go to the end, there was one other thing in my notes that I did want to highlight, which was the awesome opening title sequence that we got for this one.
Oh, yes, please go ahead.
Yeah, it's so cool. I love the way that they were doing, like, I don't know if it'd be like stop motion, and then the dragons would, like, their face would be frozen on the screen staring right at us, and they would melt away back into this kind of like mythical fantasy scape. It was just so cool, and the music was great too. Yeah, really stood out that one.
Yeah, it's funny how they do a, I guess they emphasize the dragon in the way of like a dragon boat.
Yeah.
Almost like I got the impression, at least the way I interpreted the scene, was the initial like Nora's character and her father and her the rest of the crew, that's them making their way from Hong Kong to Rome. That was my interpretation. Maybe that's a little too obvious, but like that was just how I interpreted the scene.
Yeah, or at the very least, it, yeah, showing the traveling to different places, people who are willing to be immigrants.
And to, I guess, have a sort of like, not identity, but to remember like, your heritage. Kind of similar to if you remember, this is, sorry if this is like random, but if you remember when we went and saw Anastasia, they kind of had that as well with like,
Yeah.
separate the idea of the state of Russia with the culture itself of Russia.
Yeah, I like that they were making those, yeah, important points, especially at that point when we went to go see it. Yeah, that was.
Separate, yeah, again, this is, I think this film also holds up to today's standards as well. I hope I can say that with like, an honest, in an honest sentence.
Yeah, I can't imagine why I wouldn't, but who knows?
Need who knows. And before we get to Chuck Norris itself, we have two other martial artists, and I think this is going to be a call forward potentially. This is like his start, where we're going to introduce other, and I guess even Street Fighter as well, kind of also maybe took something of this nature, where we bring in other martial artists to be like, the mini bosses or whatnot before the final boss. Maybe it had already existed prior to this film, but it probably has. But yeah, in this case, yeah, we get like two guys who do karate, excuse me, a European fighter and a Japanese fighter, which Japanese fighter I actually think was a, I think he was a Chinese guy, I could be wrong. And then the other guy was I believe one of Bruce Lee's students.
Okay. Yeah, and those are the guys that they basically just kind of like sicked the karate guys on, like, okay, you guys kind of go deal with them. Like, they're not really a big deal. Or maybe I'm misremembering.
No, well, yeah, what it was is that like, so all the guys show up to, the second in command or the translator, brings them all to that quarry, and the two, goons show up, and then like all four of them like attack them or take them all on. They get beaten up. Bruce Lee, starts whooping arse, and then once they're dealt with, he goes and follows the sniveling translator, and that's where the Coliseum happens, or that's where they go to the Coliseum.
Yeah, and those guys are okay. I think that in the afterglow of the fight with Chuck Norris, I just kind of forgot them, you know?
That's, see, I think what needed to happen was, and they could, this is what they couldn't, they tried to, but they probably couldn't do it with. It would have been better if they, I say better, sorry. I guess what would have, could have happened is they would have gone to the Coliseum initially, and then they would have like all, like not on the battlefield, but they could have like fought the two karate characters, and then that's when Bruce Lee makes his way to the top. Now I'm kind of, I'll admit, it's almost like I'm making mention of Game of Death, which we haven't gotten to yet, but I'm saying that's what it is. It's almost like a precursor to what he's going to do in Game of Death.
That's fair. Yeah, and maybe I'm going back and watching some of those scenes now. They do seem like good, but yeah, maybe missing some of the great storytelling in the match at the end. But yeah, did you have more to say with those ones before we move on to Norris?
Again, yeah, narrative wise, I was looking for more of that stuff. And again, even in like the it being set in the quarry, I was like, it's a little bit too open of a space. It's shot very well, don't get me wrong about that. I love it, but I think narratively it would make more sense if they had it, over in the Coliseum. Again, sometimes when you just put a character inside a building or something like that, something about like, because they only have like one way to get out, it makes more sense. Whereas just like I could just run. Because you have like an open field. It's like, well, I can just run away and there's no threat of guns. So why don't I just run away?
Yeah, that's something that Street Fighter learned very well, to put your characters in enclosed locations for big fight scenes. So many memorable ones.
Oh, yeah. Isolated. Even if it did lead to like some weird camera angles and all stuff, but like, that's fine. That is goofy for that. And for the most part, there's only the scene, the shot of, I think, when Lee's character is running in the Coliseum, you kind of see it's almost shaky cam. I was like, oh, that's surprising. But I could still tell what was happening on screen, but it was far away, so it's not like terribly terrible shaky cam. But anyway, so we finally get, the introduction of Colt. I kind of wish that, again, narratively, there was, like, I wish that, like, Lee's character was, like, affiliated with this guy, or these guys, like, both these characters knew each other at some point. I think that would have, like, really done it a lot more, like, well for what it was going into it. But for Norris himself, like, Yex, you know, as a thug would, but for what he is, I did get some charisma from him. What do you think?
Yeah, you could tell almost immediately once we see him, even before the fight, when he just like comes off that plane. It's like, oh yeah, this guy has a kind of aura to him. And then once they meet and they take their moment to kind of like stretch before their bout. Yeah, you could just see that guy is like, oh man, he's a bigger level boss than any of the guys we've seen previously in this. They just present him like that, and he carries that energy well. Although I did think once he took off his shirt, I was like, oh no, it's Bruce Lee versus the Wolfman. Like that is, I was like, is Lee going to be grabbing onto that hair and like yanking him around? Which I thought was funny that they did do that.
I forgot to mention as well, in the beginning of the credits, in those beautiful credits, as you mentioned, they did give, Lee did the night, which I rarely think we do this anymore. He actually gave credit to, like, you know, their titles, which was really nice, showing, like, you know, basically their resumes of, you know, what these guys have accomplished. So I really appreciate that, of just, like, cool. Not just Bruce Lee, but, or sorry, Bruce Lee, not just Chuck Norris, but the two karate guys, and even, I think, maybe it was Japanese, I forget now. But, like, I appreciate that, where he actually does give the time to, like, actually make, you know, again, give the credits to those who have worked hard in this. The even though he doesn't say much, he doesn't have much to say. I don't even know if it's his voice, because I know what Chuck Norris sounds like, but I'm probably dubbed. I wish I like the presence that he does stand. Starting them off as like, you know, distance, like from a distance to like moving closer. That's good anticipation. That's a really good build up towards what happens.
Yeah.
And when I first saw the fight scene, both in like on YouTube and then in, what is it? And then on like, you know, when I watched this, officially, I was like, oh man, this is a, wow, they actually filmed in the Coliseum. That's awesome. And then I watched it yesterday and I was like, oh, never mind. No. It's actually just a stage.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a scene where you could very clearly tell it's not even like matte paintings, it's just like a tarp that they just like painted on.
Yep.
I was like, oh wow, that's
I was wondering if it was a green screen in the background or if it was just like a big photo of like the Coliseum just in the background.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what that was. Oh, I did want to say I this is a stupid note that I wrote down, but I did love that as they're beginning their fight, all these little kittens come over and they're looking around. And I was like, oh, maybe their ancestors, you know, they could tell a good exhibition match because their ancestors were there back in the Coliseum days watching.
Mm-hmm.
And they've trained their youngsters on the stories of the good old days with the gladiators. Yeah, so they all come over. They're like, okay, we got to watch this fight. This is going to be something to tell our kids one day. Stupid.
To shoot, the one of the reasons I guess he selected Rome was because of its Coliseum history. To set it there was just absolutely incredible. Just obviously his ambition would probably have it to like taken place literally like in the center, even though that's like, you know, where we think of the, when we see the Coliseum and we see like, you know, the underground of it, or at least, you know, the ground, it's got all these like, you know, labyrinth of maze or all these like buildings around it, not buildings but all these pillars. I believe that was the underground, because I think there was a above ground, right? There was a whole stadium above it. So obviously what Lee probably wanted to do was have something like that where it's above the ground, but obviously he couldn't do that. So, but in this, yeah, he sets, like, again, yeah, just, you know, him and Colt there, nobody else but those kittens. And again, one thing I rarely see sometimes, maybe, yeah, I don't even know if the raid did this, but he just starts off as, let's warm up, let's, like, you know, get ready. And I enjoyed that. That was just... So what did you think of the fight? Let me ask you that. What was your, like, what are your thoughts on this fight?
Well, just to continue to build it up a little bit more, just before I get to the fight, I did want to say, yeah, I think it's interesting, and I think it's, in a way, a mistake that they bring in this character that has had no connection to the crime boss. He's not even really there as a member of their gang.
Nope.
He's just like a paid mercenary. They're like, you're an experienced fighter. Why don't you come here and lend your abilities against this other experienced fighter? And he has no... They give us no real character, but I'm assuming that he's there because he's just like, I faced everyone and I beat everyone. You say that this is someone that could give me a real competition, I'll come. And so he respects him as a competitor. And immediately you could tell that our Bruce Lee character can tell that this is someone to respect and treats him that way. And so I appreciate that, just from a, like, these are two very experienced martial artists coming against each other, and they recognize that this is going to be, you know, the stuff of legend kind of thing. Maybe people aren't going to tell the legend, but, you know, it's one of those things that you don't get to experience much in your life, so they treat it with that respect. But in terms of the plot of the movie, it is just so strange that he really has no connection to anything. And this feels like this could have been from any other movie and fit just as well as it does here.
It actually makes me want to go and watch the dubs, the Cantonese and the English dubs, just to see what story they told. If they at all dropped any, like, or if they had the narrative of, like, oh, Colt and A Long, I believe is Lee's character. I just saw it on screen. Yeah. Lee's character, they both knew each other. They had, like, you know, traveled together at one point. This actually is, like, it's not fully on, but it kind of reminds me, it's not the obvious inspirations for the characters, but it definitely shows, like, a great, I guess, inspiration for what they made the characters from Street Fighter, the video game, of Ken and Ryu. Just because Ken usually has, like, the strawberry blonde hair or the redhead, and then, I know Ryu is Japanese, but just, like... He's also a martial artist. It's like, this is a good pairing. It almost makes me want to see, like, a team-up movie between Lee and Norris.
Oh, it would have been cool. Because, yeah, I think their chemistry, once they do start throwing those kicks around, and I think that they're... Yeah, it's... And just the physicality of the different size of them. Like, it's not like Chuck Norris is, like, super built, but he looks big compared to Bruce Lee. And Bruce Lee's really cut, so it's... It becomes this kind of, like, bulky machine versus, like, this lean little guy who can really zoom around. And they do that with the impact, too, with some of the shots that Chuck Norris gets early on. Like, you can feel a big weight of the... Once he hits, it hits hard.
And one thing I love about this fight is that it's... many other fights have done this as well, but, like, even before this film, I mean. But this one showcases a... Even though, I don't even think, like, Star Wars kind of had this. They never did, really. Like, the original trilogy. Except for... Actually, no, it did, but in episode 4. With just the trench run. Where Lee is forced to adapt. Lee is forced to try something new. And he doesn't instantly take down Norris. Because you could probably tell, like, maybe going forward, there's a certain person who is able to easily get through... waves of different, you know, mooks and people, you know who I'm talking about, with little ease, with little difficulty. I like that this is where Lee is, like, the whole movie, he's basically, like, been, either he's been sucker punched, or he was taken aback, like, just by surprise. This time, it's actually somebody who is, he actually tastes blood, he actually does have blood on him, but it's not the blood of the innocents, it's just like, wow, he put me to the ground twice. I'm gonna have to try something new. And from there, he demonstrates, you know, the fact that, you know, we see Norris is very, or Colt, sorry. Colt is very rigid. He's not moving his feet. He's, you know, very, like, you know, standing his ground. And so Lee decides, all right, let's, all these characters, excuse me, decides, all right, let's be a little more ebb and flow. Let's, you know, bounce around a little. And that's when he starts, like, you know, even though it looks like Norris is, you know, throwing kicks, Lee's character is slowly getting a feel for what he's doing just to, like, time his kicks and time his shots. And so once that happens, oh, it's a count, like the tables turn for Lee's character, and then he goes on the offensive and gets Colt down twice and then against the wall, and ooh, then the leg break happens.
Yeah, and as a fan of professional wrestling and just kind of the art of telling a story through just fighting.
Yep.
I think that they do it great. And like you mentioned, with the ability of Lee to adapt, that's kind of the weakness of our Chuck Norris character, who, I mean, eventually he realizes that he needs to adapt, but it's just too late. And once Lee starts doing that thing where he's like bobbing around, you can tell that it's just distracting to him. He's so used to kind of the practice techniques that his competitors would do, that kind of variance, he just doesn't know how to adapt. And then once he starts bobbing around, it's like it throws off his balance. And so when he throws a kick, it's wrongly timed, or when he gets hit, he falls even harder than he would normally. And yeah, that's when it's just, there's no way back to, it's just like the desperation ploys from that point on.
And yet at the same time, I appreciate, like, it makes me respect Colt's character even more, where he's not so rigid in that he won't try something new. Maybe it is a desperate act, but I see it as well, just like him trying.
Yep. Yeah.
But by that point, it is, you're right, it is too late, where Lee kind of has already figured him out. And because, unfortunately for Colt, it's too new for him. This is too new to him. And because it is Lee's character's style, he knows, like, I guess, how to, hopefully, well, you'd think that, hopefully he knows how to, like, get him at a disadvantage with this.
Yeah, and the only time I feel that kind of predatory element to the Bruce Lee persona in this one is around this time, but you can even feel, like, once he realizes that he's got that he's got him beat, you can see him start to, his, like, expression softens, and he stops bobbing around, and he's just more focused, like, yeah, just right on top of his prey, waiting to deliver that kind of submission blow. And then once he realizes, like, okay, you're defeated, there's no way that you can come back for this, he's just kind of like, okay, yield. He gives him that look. He doesn't say it, but it's just like, okay, it's time for this to end. But yeah, the Chuck Norris character just can't help himself, and he goes for one last time, and that's when Bruce Lee steps too far and, yeah, kills him. Which I thought they handled that well.
It was treated with so much respect and so much dignity. Just,
yeah.
The way Norris acted as well, this is what I mean by, like, I want to do something like a spinoff with Norris, because the way he sold and he acted in that fight, not just how well he, you know, threw kicks, but the ability to act and the ability to, like, act with his, yeah, like, you know, face and his body movements. Oh boy, like, I'm not saying he's an Oscar-worthy actor, but boy, like,
oh,
just for somebody who probably never had any acting experience prior, good grief, I'm impressed. Like, I'm just like, wow. Like, out of nowhere. Like, so, again, I gotta tip my hat to Norris for this. At the desperate, and the fear and almost, like, self-preservation he has, like, I feel sorry for him by the end. I feel sorry for Colt by the end. Where I'm just like, I don't want Lee to do this. And yeah, you're right. Like, you know, Lee's character just stands his ground. Now that you're right, the tables have turned. Now he's the one focused and standing strong. And I feel like you're not, it's not just prey that he's still the predator. I feel like he's like, right. Like, yield and submit. But Lee doesn't want this to happen. He doesn't want to kill him.
No.
I feel like it's almost accidental Lee does it. Like, it's,
yeah,
his character doesn't mean to kill Colt, but it just, I guess, happens. And maybe it was, he didn't intentionally do it, but at the same time, he is devastated when it happens.
Yeah, no, it wasn't his fault. I mean, he held him in that kind of submission position, and it was just Colt punching and punching that finally pushed him to, yeah, finally disable him. And it just turned out to be a fatal move.
A lot of heart. Like Colt showed a lot of heart. Like, you know, would not go down. Would just like even with like one leg, still kept on trying to fight. And you can just see the respect Lee's character had from him in that moment. And yeah, unlike every other character he encountered this, or like every other goon that he encountered, maybe not so much was Karate Guys, but had encountered beforehand, this he gives like complete and utter respect and admiration to his fallen foe. Like, this is a fallen brother in arms, a person who in another life probably would have, you know, been his friend.
Yeah, a respected opponent. Yeah, unlike everyone else who is just kind of, yeah, they're just like street thugs. They're local hoodlums. They're not really, they're no match for him. That's why he can just take on crowds of them and just beat the hell out of them and be like, okay, go home. Stop trying to do this. This is someone, and again, that's why it doesn't really feel like it fully fits into the story. Why this guy's even here. Like, I don't know. It's a great sequence on its own, but it does just feel a bit odd.
And to like put the bow on the present, or like, you know, the cherry on top of this like absolutely wonderful cake of a fight,
Yeah.
he takes, you know, he puts his shirt on, and before he leaves, goes and grabs Colt's shirt and or gi and belt, and puts it over his, you know, deceased comrade,
Yeah.
or his deceased opponent, excuse me. And yeah, and by the way, just for the not just the narrative of the fight, but what do you think of the camera work and the use of, like, you know, how they filmed the scene?
Some excellent uses of zoom. I think they only used slow motion once, and they picked a great position to do it in, a great framing with them as the center of like this big space, and so there's a lot of room for them to move around. Overall, I think the photography was great in that regard. But I will say I could not help but find it humorous the inclusion of the cat faces. They even have a cat there who like announces the go. He's like, fight. The cat does a
Fight.
very loud meow. And
Yeah.
then they're out. They keep cutting the little kitten faces. And even the big final moment when, after Chuck Norris has done such a brilliant job selling that he's defeated. They both know he's defeated, but he still stands up to give one last kind of strike. And they do this thing where they zoom in twice on Chuck Norris's face. They cut to a kitten, they zoom in twice in his face, and they cut to Bruce Lee and zoom in twice in his face. And I was like, oh, the cat's so involved. He's riveted. If this was a wrestling event, he would be losing his mind at the end of this match. I just thought that was like, why cut in the cat in the middle of that impassioned exchange?
It was an interesting bit there with that, but, you know, it does make me wonder if, I don't want to say unfortunately, especially since I don't know how long Lee was, you know, writing this thing, this here plot, or writing this whole story, but I do wonder if it was a case of he had scenes in mind, and then he filled in the blanks with like a very like quick, I don't want to say rush, well, rushed or quick story, basically.
I could see that. I could definitely see that.
Where he didn't have enough time to bring all the parts together, because I don't want to say this is a first draft, but darn it, it definitely, like, this leaves me with wanting to see more of what Bruce Lee would come with, because
Yeah.
if it wasn't for the narrative that he had, like, on the surface, just the fight itself. Oh boy, yeah, that basically just sold me so on it. So I was like,
Yeah.
so that's why this film just, like, I guess I'm in the middle of the road for this film, and I guess, you know, I know we're getting towards the end here, but I guess I'll flip my sign and just say I'm feeling this. Like, this is,
Yeah.
it's maybe a lower feeling, but that fight at the end just definitely, yeah, it kind of shoots it. I don't want it to rely on just that fight alone, but. Because like I do have criticisms about the film, but I can't give this a not feeling, because I came away at least at the end of that fight with a big smile on my face.
Oh yeah, this is the kind of final fight scene that you want. Again, story-wise, it doesn't necessarily fit, but to tell a story just through the action, to have two masterclass screen performers in terms of their martial arts. I mean, again, we don't know about Bruce Lee's actual proficiency as a martial artist, but at least Chuck Norris has his accolades. And to see the two of them go against each other in this way, I feel like it's just, yeah, you can feel the power of the scene. And again, it's stuff like this that I love in professional wrestling. And when it comes to this kind of stuff well represented in martial arts movies, I absolutely love it as well. And honestly, I wish that more martial arts movies did focus on things like this. I feel like a lot of them do love to throw in those kind of big brawl scenes with a whole bunch of people attacking and our lead kind of in the middle. Like, those scenes are fun, but they never give you the same avenue for storytelling through action that you get during a bout like this between two highly trained fighters. I just feel like that's, for me, a more interesting avenue for martial arts.
Yeah, I guess you could say Dragon Ball Z ran with this whole idea with, like, Vegeta and Goku, and probably many other characters, sorry, and many other, like, shonen anime have done the same thing and just stretched it out for numerous amount of episodes that, you know, kind of overstayed their welcome or went too far with it or went too long with it. I that's the thing. I don't want to, like, put this on, like, a high praise or, like, I don't know, put this on a high table or something like that, but, like, yeah, this is, you're definitely right, this is stuff that I look for in films as well, where the fight scene is not just they're throwing their arms and bodies at each other. You know, have some form of, like, art, like, have some form of story to it in a way. And I think, in a way, you know, throw me under the bus for this, I think Captain America Winter Soldier kind of has that in maybe, like, the last fight that between Bucky and Cap. I think, maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, we'll get to that eventually. Not the same as this, obviously, but it's Cap going in there, obviously fulfilling a task, but he is not there to kill the Winter Soldier, because that's obviously, like, part of the movie, that's the big thing of the movie, of just, like, he does not wish to kill his friends. So it's like, that's where the drama comes from. That's like, okay, that's interesting. But I think you're right, where it'll be interesting when I go forward from now to see if there is films that have that. I guess, you know, in a way, Return of the Jedi kind of has that.
Yep, that's fair. That's fair. And that is impactful.
Not as like in-depth as this one is. Maybe almost comparable, maybe. We'll see.
Yeah, that's more literal storytelling.
Yes.
I like the, again, to use wrestling terms, like in-ring psychology.
Yep.
Where they're not spelling out what's going on. We're just, you can just tell through the reactions and the way that they pace the match. That's the stuff that I really loved about this.
Let's see. Any other, like, lingering thoughts? So I was watching the scene, by the way, through this again as well. I saw the scene of the chef and how they got that letter from the mafia about the gunman at midnight. And it came in that little coffin of a Catholic coffin almost, which is just really cool and iconography, okay. I guess, stands out. And the way they played the chef, they had a green ominous glow to him. So I guess that's also where some, like, early setup of his malicious nature is.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm tapped for this one. I don't know if I have any, all my notes are done. So,
oh, and another quick bit is when Lee goes, or after Lee confronts the shooter, like, for the second time and, you know, throws a dart in his butt. When he comes back and finds Nora's character's apartment ransacked and she's been captured, I like the bit with his acting where he's just scared. Where even though he's a tough guy, as soon as he has to, like, confront, or not even confront, when he has to, like, talk on the phone with somebody, oh boy, I like that scene where he, like, drops the dart and brings out that, you know, card that he's supposed to call, like, the restaurant or whatnot, and he can't speak English properly. So it's like, I like that scene.
I like that scene too. Yeah, I thought that was set up well too.
And finally, one other, like, last setup bit where the sniffling sidekick or translator for the big boss, he's like, I'm willing to bet my life on Colt being able to beat Lee's character. That's kind of true, because in the end, like, you know, Lee's character comes out victorious against Colt, and then the big boss shows up and shoots both the chef and the sniffling translator. So it happened.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. But yeah, I guess are we ready to go to the final thoughts? I can't think of anything else to say.
I think that's it for now. I can't really think much else of it. So I won't say, like, a full on mixed bag, but I was definitely, I'm still feeling, this is a strong feeling it for me. Despite you know, this is, I guess, having like, if this is like the issues of like the first film, I say issues.
Yeah.
If this is, you know, Bruce Lee's first film, I'm so impressed. Like, narratively, it's not all there, but it's not like it's not like he didn't have ideas coming into this.
Yeah, I think it does share some of the sloppiness of the Big Boss. I think there's some things that are done better. Like we said, some of the action, some of the building up to the fight. I feel like they utilize the presence of Bruce Lee as a martial artist better here than they did in the Big Boss. And so ultimately, I think I do like this one better than that first one. But it is definitely a sloppy film narratively, and yeah, some of the humor doesn't necessarily land as well. Although I do like quite a bit of it. So it probably won't be the top of my favorites list when we come to the end, but it's a very solid feeling it for me as well. I think that this was a lot of fun, and I will most definitely return to it in the near future. I would like to rewatch this again, especially for that great final action scene. That thing is just stellar.
I don't think this would be called a vanity project because there is actual thought put into this.
Yeah. But yeah, thank you, Isaac, for joining me once again on, for another one of our You're the Dragon episodes. I've been enjoying this series quite a bit so far, and oh boy, I can't wait to get to the next episode. So cheers for coming up with this idea.
Thank you, my friend. Anytime. And I leave you with this audience tonight, or to, you know, the end of this video or this audio podcast, whatever it's called. I'll leave you with this at the end. What is the way of the dragon? Till next time. Peace. Honestly, I don't know. I have no idea.
Me neither. Yeah, maybe it's just punching.
Probably not. Maybe it is the a dragon respects another's
Oh.
ways of fighting, I suppose.
Yeah, could be. Could be.